Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Tom Moran here from Tom's Big Spider. So as you've all probably deduced from the title of this one, we're going to be talking about the best species of tarantulas to start off with for someone who is looking up to grow their first sling. Now, obviously, this comes with a lot of caveats. Any sling can work to start off, and I want to make that very clear. Some folks can jump right in with, you know, it's just like the old world discussion. Sure, for most people, it makes more sense to start with other spiders first, some new world species, and build up to it, but there are folks that jump right in. It's the same thing with slings. There are a lot of folks out there that get into the hobby, start picking up slings. They don't find that there was that much difficulty to it. I think once many people start raising slings, get some time into it, get some experience with raising slings, they realize that is it a little more stressful to raise a spider up from a sling? Well, yes. Obviously, they're more prone to dehydration. You have a lot more, a higher mortality rate overall with slings because we've talked about, you know, many different podcasts or touched upon this, the fact that in the wild, a lot of these guys probably aren't meant to live. And what happens is we hatch out a sac, and instead of leaving them there so that the larger ones predate on the smaller ones, we separate them all, we nurture them, we raise them up. So sometimes you get, you know, a lot of deaths that you can't figure out what went wrong, and that can be something that freaks people out. So there definitely are some extra stressors that come with raising a spider up from a sling. I mean, I will attest to this myself. I know a lot of folks out there will agree with me. Now, with that said, raising a spider up from a sling is one of the most rewarding things you can do in the hobby. I have explained many times that back in the day when I first got into the hobby, I would read the size of the slings that were selling, and I didn't want little teeny tiny slings, and I was always looking for juveniles or sexed female adults. But then I got some experience raising slings and realized I didn't want to purchase older ones anymore. It kind of took away some of the fun out of the hobby for me to get a spider that was a juvenile or a young adult. I really enjoyed, there's just something about being able to look at an adult spider and go, and they and be able to say, I raised that up from a teeny tiny little sling to this big, robust adult. It's an amazing experience. The spiders that I've raised up from slings to adults, they have an extra special place in my heart. Not saying I don't love the ones that I got that were juveniles or sub-adults. I still love them, but there's just something about raising them up. And I think for a lot of folks, one of the big milestones in the hobby, we talk about, you know, getting our belts, our green belt, our purple belt. I've heard that analogy before. One of the stepping stones to becoming a seasoned keeper is being able to say you've raised some slings up to adults. I think that's very important because there's an extra, you need an extra attention to care early on. Some of the species out there nowadays that are available, especially the ones on the beginner's list, are just basically foolproof when it comes to husbandry. So getting one that's already 4 inches and raising it up to 6 inches really isn't much of an accomplishment. I mean, it's nice, but it's not the same accomplishment as getting that same one as a little sling, growing it up through all those stages to adulthood. That really points to something. So one issue I realized very early on when I got into the Tom's Big Spider stuff is when you put together the, everybody wants to do the beginner species list. I think they're very, very important to a lot of people. I started off, I'll throw it out there, when I first very early on got into the hobby, I looked up a lot of different beginner species lists, cross-reference them with other beginner species lists, try to find commonalities between them, kind of put together my own list of spiders I wanted to start with. Now, did I deviate from this rather quickly? Yes, I did. I deviated from it very, very quickly, but it did help me kind of get an idea of the fact, that was my introduction to the fact, there are new worlds, there are old worlds, there are moisture-dependent species, there are ones that behavior-wise might be a little too much for somebody to handle. So I think when starting with the beginner species list, we put a lot of spiders on there and genera that are generally in the GAB species list, meaning the Gramostola, Faunapelma, Brachypelma, because these are recognized as being very hardy, long-lived spiders that are super easy to care for and that generally grow up to be docile adults. And as new world species, one that is keeping one of these species doesn't have to worry about the potent venom. However, after years of doing this, and it didn't take me too long to start recognizing there was a problem here, I realized that some of the species we put on those lists are not necessarily the ones I would tell somebody, hey, you're going to start with a sling, start with a Faunapelma, start with a Gramostola species, start with a Brachypelma species. Now, to be clear, can people start with them? Of course they can. And if they can find well-started ones, great, they are awesome ones to start with, but that's something that started to become clear. And I think what happened over the course of the last, you know, decade and a half or so is a lot of these species you would find sub-adults and adults on the market because they were pulling them out of the wild. And what happened was Mexico closed their borders down, Chile closed their borders down. Suddenly, all these species that were very readily available as adults are nowhere to be found. So what happens is people read, or watch a video talking about Brocky Palma Smithy. Brocky Palma Smithy, it's a hobby staple. They're amazing. They get big. They are supposedly very tractable. And they go out and they quickly realize that there's no adults available. So they go, oh, I'll just get a sling. And that's going to introduce some new challenges because these really slow growing species. Now, sure, I want to throw it out there because every time I do something talking about slow growing species, somebody comes on that has this ridiculously fast growing spider that's in what that is one of these species, and I'm not discounting that, but the majority of folks are going to find that Gramostola, Afana Palma, Brocky Palma slings, especially if you get the little teeny tiny ones, and I don't know, maybe across the pond, they're a little easier to come by. Over here, generally when we get them in, they're very, very small, not particularly well started. So they pick these up and they go, wait a minute, this is a beginner species? This is stressing me the heck out. This thing's tiny. I can't find food for it. I can't tell if it's eating. It's fasting. Whole plethora of difficulties that come with keeping one of these beginner species, but starting with it as a sling. That can be a whole issue unto itself. Another example of this, in my first beginner species list, I had Homeoma chilensis, which at the time was Eulathus species red. And the reason why is because there were so many wild caught adult females in the hobby, which is sad looking back at it. I didn't know any better at the time, but they were everywhere. They were inexpensive. My first few, I think I bought for $40. Amazing spiders, a fantastic spider for somebody getting into the hobby to start with. And unfortunately, very fortunately, they closed down the borders. We can't get those adults anymore, which is fantastic. So it meant we had to breed them, and they were a little difficult to breed. And then we got the slings. The slings are tiny. They're minuscule. They take forever to grow. So you have all these people going, this was a good beginner species. I can't find an adult. I'll just pick up one of these slings. And then realizing, oh my gosh, this is stressful. So I think there's a big difference between a good beginner species, which means a spider, you know, as an adult is going to be an easy one to keep, and a good one that I would tell somebody or recommend somebody to start off with if they're keeping slings for the first time. I think there's a very big difference between them. So in this episode today, what I'm going to do is break down some of the species I recommend now when people go, hey, I want to keep a sling for the first time. What would be a good one to start off with? Now, when I made this list, the problem is many of the species on this list, or some of the species on this list, aren't ones you would normally see on a beginner species list. So we're thinking in terms of whoever's doing this is probably starting off with some experience, probably has a couple larger spiders. This is usually how it happens. People go out there, they try to find some bigger ones first. They realize, hey, I'm ready to keep slings. And then they move into keeping slings. And this is why I think some of the ones on this list, although normally not recommended to beginners, would work just fine. Now, for somebody just starting off and maybe have not kept spiders before, I will say a lot of the ones on this list, I know many, many folks that I've corresponded with or chatted with over the years who got into the hobby, immediately jumped in with them and had zero problem whatsoever. One species in particular, I used to keep off of my beginner species list because people would talk about the fact that behaviorally they can be a handful. And now I've completely done an about face, a 180. I absolutely wholeheartedly recommend them to folks who are just getting into the hobby looking to get slings. So before we get into this, here are some of the things I considered, the points I considered when coming up with the species I was going to put on this list. Number one, availability and cost. It drives me nuts sometimes where somebody will come on and say, hey, I want to get a sling. I've never kept a sling before. And somebody will come on, and I get it. They love it. It's amazing. An amazing animal. Maybe it is very, very easy to keep, but they'll come on and they'll recommend something that is either A, very new to the hobby, B, very difficult to find, and usually, in all cases, very, very expensive. Those keeping slings for the first time usually don't want to start off with super expensive spiders, nor does it make much sense to recommend something that's very difficult to come by. So the first thing I considered was availability and cost. The spiders on this list are quite prevalent in the hobby, at least here in the U.S., and are usually under $50 is slings. I say usually because we have one here that depending on where you get it, I picked up mine for about $55. I just did a search on it. Of course, they're more expensive now, but they're usually less expensive than some of the other ones out there. Now, the next thing we're going to consider when coming up with this list is hardiness. The spiders on this list are usually very forgiving when it comes to care and are quite hardy, even as slings. So this means no moisture dependency. That doesn't mean they don't require some moist substrate. And I want to make that very clear because I've had folks say, well, I want something I can keep bone dry. There's only a handful of slings I can think of that I would tell somebody it's okay to keep bone dry. And the majority, even some of the arid species, appreciate a little moisture, appreciate some water dribbled on the webbing or water dish. So let's make that clear. But I think the majority of the ones on here are going to be very, very hardy and able to thrive in a variety of conditions. So that means if things get a little bit dry, they're not immediately going to die on you, which is very important. These are ones that I can tell you I've kept and had zero issues as far as, you know, unexpected mortality or anything like that. So very, very hardy spiders as slings and adults. The other thing we're going to look at is growth rate. I think this is incredibly important. And this is why. How many times have you had somebody tell you, you know what, you should start with a sling because then you can grow with the spider. And that sounds fantastic on paper and does work very well with certain species. However, going back to our point that a lot of the species recommended on beginner's list are Gramostola, Fondopelma, Brachypelma, you are not going to grow with that spider as it grows up if you start with a teeny tiny sling. Using myself as an example, I remember getting some Brachypelma, Gramostola species very early on, thinking this will be good. I'll raise them up and then I'll get used to it. You know, as it goes from sling to juvenile to adult, it'll give me more experience. By the time these guys reached the juvenile stage, I had already moved into old worlds. I had been keeping faster arboreals. I had so far advanced in the hobby that it really provided me with zero experience. Keeping a spider that could take, I don't know, years to reach adulthood, to get those colors that you drooled over when you were looking at pictures and videos of them online, waiting that long for a spider to reach that point, most folks are already going to have moved on to something else. I can't tell you how many people I've talked with over the years who said, yeah, I started, my first sling was a Brachypelma Smithy. I figured I'd grow with it. It's now about 2.5 inches and I have an OBT. I have this, I have that. It doesn't give you a good opportunity to grow the spider. I think to really truly grow the spider, you need something that has at least a medium growth rate, one that's going to molt with regularity and one that's going to put on decent size with these molts. You feel like you're actually working your way up. You start off with a little half inch spider, you know, a couple months go by, you have an inch spider. It's still kind of tiny. You're still feeling okay about it. Then next, you know, boom, the colors come in. It's a little bit, you know, maybe it's kicking a little hairs now. Maybe it's moving. I think it's important that they grow more quickly so you can actually grow with the spiders. You want them to put on good size with these molt. You want them to molt with regularity. That will allow you to grow with the spider. Unfortunately, I really don't think it's possible to grow with a spider that can take 10 years or more to reach adulthood. And then the other thing we're going to consider on this one, and which is why I took one off and put it in honorable mentions, we'll obviously get to that at the end of this one. Most species on this list start off as at least decently sized slings, which means they'll be easier to spot the sling, easier to procure live prey for them. I can admit freely that the super teeny tiny spiders freak me out still. When I have a hard time seeing the spider in the substrate, when I got to get like magnification in there, for example, my Pseudohoplopus species Columbias, so teeny tiny when I got them, I couldn't even see them in there. They were about the same size as the grains of substrate. And that can cause people a lot of grief. So the ones on this list are going to be ones that start off decently sized or usually sold decently sized. So at least you'll have an easier time setting up and seeing your spider, knowing if it's eating. Because again, when you can't see the spider, it freaks. It's almost impossible to procure a live prey. My Pseudohoplopus Columbias were so small that they were too tiny for even fruit flies. I started them off dropping some springtails in there. They were eating the springtails. Now, if you've raised springtails, you know how tiny they are. That's how small these were. Now, they can scavenge feed, of course, but I know a lot of people that freak out because they'll drop in a big cricket leg. The spider will eat, but it doesn't take much of the cricket leg, so you can't really see that it ate, and then they freak out and go, it's not eating. I just had a discussion with a keeper who was keeping a rhesus species, and he said, they're not eating. I'm dropping in these cricket legs. They're still there, and I'm like, they're probably eating. You're not seeing it, and they're probably not eating that much, so it's not registered. registering. So at least these, the ones on this list, are going to start off larger so that you don't have to freak out about keeping those teeny tiny slings, because I do think keeping the super tiny ones is a step up in difficulty when it comes to starting with spiderlings. So to kick it off, the first one on my list I debated, but I do think it's a good one. It's one that I started off with a long time ago as a sling, and over the years I've spoken to many others that did the same. We're talking about Lazy Adora Parahibana, or the Salmon Bird Eater. Love these, but very, very popular in the hobby, which is good because they, I believe the egg sacs for these guys can have up to 2,000 babies, which is why they are so prevalent. They are often given away as freebies. I ended up with 4, I think, at one point, and 2 of them were freebies. They just kept getting them and said, like, oh, another Salmon Bird Eater, yay. But they are a great one, I think, to start off with people who want to have a sling that's going to grow fairly quickly overall, and there's a caveat to that. Now, this is over years of producing content and putting up, you know, videos, doing podcasts, websites. I originally read that these guys were super fast growing. I have not found that to be my experience. I found medium to even slower growth rate, most of them around medium. I've spoken to other people, however, that have picked up specimens and they said they've reached 4 inches within a year. Now, one thing I will say, I have a theory that because they are so readily available, many dealers often have larger specimens or have them in many different sizes. I remember when I first bought mine, they offered them as half inch, like 3/4 inch, 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 1/2, whatever, something along those lines. I remember picking up the smaller one. That one took a long, long, long time to grow. However, the next one I got was a freebie. It was about 1 inch, maybe a little bit bigger. That one easily matured out male really fast. I had a third one that ended up being a female, again, grew more quickly. So if every time I post something with LPs, I have a lot of people that come on and say, yeah, mine grew a little more slowly. I had other folks come on and say mine grew much more quickly. What I will say is even the slower growing ones, they are going to molt with regularity. They are going to put on a decent amount of size. So you're going to see that growth rate. So for somebody really wanting to grow with them, these are ones that won't grow so quickly that you have a huge spider on your hand within a year, but will allow you to kind of grow with the spider. So pros, they are super hardy. When I first got into the hobby, there was a lot of talk about they were moisture dependent. A lot of folks keep them on the drier side. With slings, I would definitely give them moist substrate, juvenile moist substrate until they get a little bit older. The adults, you can keep them bone dry with a water dish. They do just fine. They eat great. Again, we talk about the growth rates pretty good. They get big. That's something to consider. I have one that's probably over 9 inches now. However, they do take, a lot of people think, oh, I'm going to have a 9-inch spider in a year or so, especially when they hear about the faster growing ones. No, it's going to take many years to reach that 9-inch mark or 8-inch mark. So just know that although they can reach, obviously, 9 inches, 10 inches, it takes them years to get that way. Now, as far as cons, again, as we talked about before, it seems to be a crapshoot whether you get a faster growing one or a slower growing one. So somebody that's reading that they grow super fast may be disappointed when they find out that their spider only hits like 1.5 inches in the first year, but that's still decent growth rate. And then again, the size. Some folks are intimidated regardless if it takes maybe 10 years to get there. Some folks getting into the hobby are intimidated by the idea of having a spider that's 8, 9, 10 inches. So even if it's going to take a while, they're freaked out about it. So LPs, definitely, I mean, they're a hobby staple, super readily available, easy to grow up. I think a really good one, again, one of the first species I started off with when I moved into slings, and I was glad I did. Oh, one other con that tends to freak people out with these, and I want to mention this because although I've mentioned this many times in all my videos with them, I still have folks who go, I don't know if this is right. They do like to burrow as slings, and when they go into pre-molt, a lot of them will fill in their burrows. So heads up there, that tends to freak some people out, and that's something that will get people to go out and buy new spiders because I remember getting mine, feeding it. It buried itself. I'm like, this is boring. I really want to dig it up, but I had read that this is what they do, so I just bought more spiders. So LP, definitely a good one to start off with. Now, the next one on my list, I'm sure some people are going to be like, wait a minute, but I have to say, after years of reading how nasty these guys were, I have a theory on these as well. I'm talking about Formictopus cancerides or the Haitian brown. Now, my theory, back in the day, Formictopus cancerides has been in the hobby longer than many, many spiders. A lot of people think they're kind of a newer thing. They've been in the hobby. I've heard folks that said they kept them in the early 80s. They were often sold or mislabeled as rose-haired tarantulas, believe it or not, Gramostola Porteria rosea. Even in my time in the hobby, I've had at least 4 different instances of somebody buying what they thought was a rose hair tarantula. It said, I don't know, this thing's big, it's a little skittish. They send me pictures of it. It was a P. cancerity. So these guys have been around a long, long time. And I do think that some of the earlier ones, or many of the earlier ones, once again, were pulled out of the wild. So I'm guessing the wild caught specimens, you're taken away from your natural environment, packed up, shipped overseas, put in a pet store, nowhere to hide, bright lights. I'm guessing a lot of them were very ornery. But I have to say, and this is my disclaimer, so to speak, I keep over 24 Phormictopus species, not individual species. I think I have around 15 or 16 of the so-called species, but we're talking about just all the Phormictopus I have, well over, probably closer to 30. I was meant to count them up before I did this. And I have had zero issue with them. I have two. My Phormictopus Dominican violets are the only two that ever had an ornery stage. And they grew out of it, which is nice, but they did have a stage where they were very skittish, would bolt around a little bit, they'd throw up this really over-the-top threat posture where sometimes they'd tip over backwards. But for the most part, mine are very, very, very calm. And I would almost call them pet rocks in some cases. I'm looking around the room, most of them are sitting right out in the open. When I take their cages down, they hunker down a little bit, they eat, they have great feeding responses, but I'm not getting those behaviors. So I want to get that out of the way, because I think it's time to... Are there folks out there that probably have some ornery cancerities or some Phormictopus species? Absolutely. Every spider can differ. Every specimen's differ in behavior. That's common knowledge. But I have not found that in general Phormictopus are over the top. So let's talk about pros as far as keeping these as spiders. Pros, very fast growing until they hit about the 4-inch mark. So these are spiders that you get as little blue slings. They start small. It can take you a year or so to put on a decent amount of size. But again, that allows you to kind of grow with the spider. The spider is going to molt. It's going to molt with regularity. It's going to put on decent size. They have one molt, again, in particular, once they hit around 2.5 inches or so, they're still blue. They all have this molt where they seem to put on like an inch or an inch and a half. They go from being slings, big slings, to fluffy. They look like adults. It's amazing. And I just had somebody comment on a YouTube video, which made me feel so good, because they're like, I just got that molt you've been talking about. I heard you say it, and my spider just went from, it looks like an inch and a half, an inch and three quarters, to like 3.5 inches. It's this big molt. And then the good news is, they march on to that size where they hit around 4 inches or so. And this could be if you have higher temperatures and you're picking to feed them aggressively, you're feeding them multiple times a week, you're probably going to have a spider that hits that 4-inch mark a year, 14 months, 16 months or so. The good news is after that, they tend to slow down. So at that point, if you continue pumping food to them, what you'll end up with is a spider that fattens up, stops eating for a bit, and takes forever to molt. So although Phormictopus cancerides can hit that 8-inch mark, I think both my three females, and if you count the ones that were sold to me as purples, then I'm pretty sure are just Phormictopus cancerides. I think 5 females, they're all around the 8.25-inch mark. It took them a long time to get there. So you will be able to grow with the spiders. So pros, fast growing, amazing eaters. These are what really sold me on these guys, was watching them hunt. They did sprint across the enclosure, they'll wrestle prey down that's even the same size as themselves. Just a fantastic to eat, and hardy as all get out. These are some of the hardiest spiders you could keep as slings. Obviously, again, we're going to say this through the entire thing. Slings, I always give my slings my substrate, but as these guys get older, things can dry out. As long as you give them a water dish, they're perfectly fine. So super, super easy to raise up. Now, cons, if you get one that grows super fast and you get an ornery one, you could go, like, 14 months, you go from a tiny sling to a more ornery adult that could be a little skittish, slapping down some threat postures. The funny thing about their threat postures is they are so over the top, but they never have their fangs out from what I've seen. So it's a lot of bluster, like, look at me, they tip over backwards. It's more comical, but for somebody who's not used to spiders and hasn't received a threat posture before, it can be intimidating. And then the other thing is, yes, they do get big. It does take a while to get there, but they do become big spiders. Remember, it takes years for them to get there. So I love Phormictopus. Obviously, I've been talking about them for years. I think they're amazing spiders. And I do think for somebody that has some experience with other spiders, it's aware of the fact that they could have a spider that has a bit of attitude. They can be a great sling to start off with. To have that satisfaction, if I pick this thing up, is about 3/4 of an inch or 1/2 inch, and now it's this big, robust adult. A lot of folks, I think, will find it very easy to grow along with them. Now, we're talking about Formictopus species. I originally got into Formictopus species because I wanted something big and bold, and as I was eyeing a bunch of Pamphlebedia species, the Pamphos were so expensive that it was like I could buy a Pampho for $120, a Pampho sling for $120, or I could get my Formictopus Cancerides sling, which I think my first one was like $28 or something. So very inexpensive. However, the prices on Pamphos for some of them, for the stock models, we'll call them, have gone down a bit over the years. They're a little easier to find. They're a little less expensive. Now, again, caveat, when I got my last Pampho, I think I spent about $55 for it. So if you do some price shopping, you can find some of the Pampho species at that $50, $55 mark. But when I went to search them up today, the majority of folks had them around $90. So these are a little more pricey compared to some of the other ones on the list. But I do think Pamphlebedia species are great ones to start with if you're looking to raise up a sling. Because again, very similar to Formictopus species. Do they get big? Yes, but they start off as beautiful slings. They're big slings. They eat great. They can be a bit skittish, but again, any spider can be a bit skittish. And overall, at least in the United States, they're becoming more readily available. Now, the one I'm going to focus on for this one, Pamphlebedia species Mascara, I'm focusing on this species because it seems to be one that's usually a bit less expensive when you find slings out there. And I obviously just got one. I'm growing it up and it's growing well. It's growing great. And it reminded me of why Pamphos are so much fun to raise up. I had Pamphlebedia species Duran early on. I got those as slings, raised them up. They're very similar to Formictopus. A lot of the stuff I'm going to say, exactly the same. They grow rather quickly overall. They start with, again, as slings, they're gorgeous. They have those beautiful Christmas tree pattern. They eat like they hit like trucks. They eat great. They put on good size. Again, with both Formictopus and Pamphlebedius, for somebody who is like wants to get one, but it's a little worried about it growing too quickly, keep in mind, you don't have to overfeed these guys. I think a lot of us get into that pattern where they're so much fun to feed. We're dropping in. I know with most slings, I try to feed them multiple times to get them out of the sling stage. These guys are naturally going to start off larger and are going to get out of that sling stage much more quickly than a lot of other species. So once a week is fine. Give them a larger meal once a week. That will slow that growth rate down, that early growth rate down a little bit, so you'll have a little more time. So instead of having, I don't know, a 5-inch spider that first year, you could easily slow it down. I think mine, I just rehoused, is right around 3.5-4-inch mark, and it's around a year old. So you can slow it down a little bit, and right now it's not an overly impressive and overly intimidating spider. So keep that in mind. If you want to start one of these, but you're a little sketchy about them growing too quickly, you don't have to have one reach that 5-inch mark in a year, and it can still be a very, very healthy spider. And you'll probably be extending its life a bit because you're not rushing it through that sling stage. But Pamphos, focusing on Mascara because that's the one I got right now. But if you can find the other ones, Antinous might be a little cheaper. I'm not sure. If you can find those, they grow relatively fast, super hardy, easy to keep. Back in the day, again, this was another one where everybody talked about them being moisture dependent. And I do think they appreciate a little bit of moisture. So you want to, once again, slings, moist, juveniles, give them some moisture, give them some room to dig. Some of them will do a little bit of burrowing, which again is going to lead to a calmer spider. So even though you have a bigger spider, it's going to be calmer. It will retreat to its burrow if it's upset or scared. And then as adults, I usually like big old water dish and I keep part of the substrate moist at all time. But Pamphos are awesome. The only cons is they can be a bit skittish. And I will say that when compared, and I'm sure there are folks out there that are going to disagree and say, well, that's not what I've seen. But as far as my Pamphos are concerned, they're much more shy and skittish overall than my Formictopus species. So like I said, I look out there, I see my Antinous. When I went to touch her enclosure earlier to feed her, she scrunched all up and then she kind of bolted around her enclosure a little bit. My chicken spider, Pamphlebedius chicken spider, Araña pollito, is very reclusive, has a den and it hides in its den when it's disturbed. My Duran has finally started to relax a bit. For many years, she was a little bit skittish. But I will say both of these species, and this should be mentioned, obviously the New World species, they have urticating hairs. A lot of folks don't want to contend with urticating hairs. I've had a Pampho kick a couple times, but not much at all. And my Formictopus, I've seen exactly one Formictopus kick. One. Out of all of those I've kept and raised up, one. As a matter of fact, I remember finding a discussion on, it might have been arachnoboards, where people were going, yeah, Formictopus species, they're great. They don't have urticating hairs. Well, they do. They just never use them. So Formictopus, Pamphlebedius, take your pick. They're both awesome. Similar, the Pamphos, a lot of the Pamphlebedius species will actually get larger than Formictopus. But again, keep in mind, Is it going to be eventually a huge spider? Yes, but that could be 6, 7, 8 years down the road. And by then, you'll have plenty of experience to deal with that large spider. Now, the next two species on the list, I kind of went back and forth on, but I think one kind of stands as a winner, at least in my mind, but you could argue either way. And then the one we're about to do, I had to put on this list because it was one of the ones I started with, and I think they can be fantastic for folks who want to raise up a sling to an adult. They're not overly large. They grow a little more slowly than some of the other ones on this. And they're gorgeous spiders. A lot of folks find these. I know I found them the first time I was looking and realizing that tarantulas came in blues and greens and oranges. And I found one of these and I'm like, oh, this has to be one of those old world species everybody's talking about. And then I found out it was a new world and I was floored. We're talking about, of course, Chromatopelma cyaneopubescens, or the green bottle blue, or the GBB as we all affectionately refer to ours as. These are amazing spiders. I absolutely love GBBs. They're one of my all-time favorite species. Now, some of the pros for these guys. Number one, slings aren't particularly tiny, and they're stunning. As a matter of fact, this is one of these species that they go through a myriad of color and pattern changes as they march on through adulthood, and each of those color and pattern phases is gorgeous in its own right. I had somebody come on the GBB video that I put up recently, and although I didn't agree with part of it, he said, I almost wish they stayed like that in slings because I think the slings are more brilliant looking than the drab adults, which calling an adult GBB drab, not so much for me. I don't quite agree, but hey, to each his or her own. But they do go through a bunch of changes, and they always look amazing. And I guess I could see how some folks would see that goldish carapace they have and the markings they have early on could be more attractive than when they get their blues and greens and the oranges. But regardless, stunning spider, not an overly large spider. I remember when I first got my GBBs, I'd read that they get to be like 6, somebody said 7 inches, and my son Roan was like really loved the GBBs, was into it. And then they reach adulthood and we realized they're about 5, 5.5 inches. So medium large size spiders, not overly huge. And I remember him being disappointed. I'm like, Roan, look at it. It's still stunning. Who cares? But they're faster growing overall. I remember when I first got mine, I was feeding mine quite a bit, like 3 times a week, and I was feeding red runner roaches. I had the little nymphs. And it was like every 2.5 months, it would go into pre-molt, molt, and then repeat. So it was like every 3 months it was molting, like clockwork the first year I had it. And they don't put on a massive amount of size each time, so you do have some time, again, to grow with your spider. They are super hardy. One of the only species of spiders that I tell people you can keep them pretty much bone dry. I know some folks, I used to keep it just a little corner wet, and then what I would do is they're heavily webbing species, which is another pro if you like heavily webbing spiders. And I would dribble every time I'd feed them, I'd dribble a little water on the webbing. So what happens is if the spider wants to drink, it can go drink it, and then that water quickly evaporates and leaves things dry. I'd mentioned this probably ad nauseum now, that when I first got into the hobby and when these guys first came in, there was a lot out there because they came from a humid environment of people keeping them humid and they were dropping like flies. And I remember finding, I have this somewhere saved or screenshotted, where it was people talking about, yeah, I've got one of those GBBs, but I've got 3 of them. They all died on me. They're super difficult to keep. No, we were keeping them wrong. It's one of those things that we talk about where we try to mimic their natural environment. And sometimes we can't compare what we got in captivity to their natural environment. It doesn't work. So they are very easy to keep and grow up. Now, as far as cons, this is the species that a lot of folks used to keeping, the gab species, pick up, and then I get the emails, oh my God, they're so fast. I've never seen anything move this quickly, which is funny because once you get into Pisolatheria, Somapius, some of those species, my God, if you get into Huntsman, forget about it. You realize they're really not that fast overall, but they can startle people with their speed and they can be more skittish and prone to using that speed, meaning some will throw up. I've had folks tell me I'd rather have a spider throw up a threat posture because at least I know it's just going to sit there than one bolt around its enclosure. And they can go through a stage where they kick hairs. I do think I had two females, my first two females that unfortunately passed, are like 10, 11 years old. They would kick hairs. They went through a stage where they would kick hairs for like 3 years. And I think part of it was due to the fact that I was keeping them completely as terrestrials. And so they were in shallow containers, which they webbed up. And as soon as I opened up the top, they felt exposed and they would kick. As soon as I put them into 12 by 12 by 12 Exoterra nano cubes, I had no problem with hair kicking. This is when we call them, we're referring to them as terrestrial plus, meaning we're not going to keep them arboreally, but we do want to give them extra room up top to do their webbing. So not an arboreal. Although there are photographs of these guys well off the ground in their natural environment. I love when folks jump on. It's a typical example of people regurgitating something they read. Somebody goes, they're not arboreal, they're going to die. And then everybody regurgitates it. They didn't bother to do enough research to realize they do sometimes set up off the ground. Arboreal, I wouldn't consider giving a spider an extra 8 inches, you know, 5 inch spider, an extra 8 inches of height in their enclosure to be an arboreal setup. So these are ones, if you give them a little room, you're going to have a spider that's much easier to deal with. My two, they webbed up the snot out of their enclosure. They had these little web tunnels, and if they got disturbed, sometimes they would just sit there. After a while, they would just sit there when I'd open the enclosures. But if they got disturbed, they'd just go ahead and they'd dip into their web dens, and they were perfectly fine. So GBBs, this was one that I think, I could be wrong, on my first beginner list, I think I had them towards the end of the list with the LP as kind of a more intermediate beginner, like you're dealing with some things you might not deal with these other species. But since then, I did wholeheartedly add them to my beginner species list. I think it's just one people need to be aware of the fact they're going to grow a little bit faster than those gab species, a lot bit faster than those gab species, and they could be a little more spunky, shall we say, than some of those other species. So Chromatopelma cyanopubescens, excellent spiders. I was going to honorable mention kind of here, and I'll just throw it in here. The Dolichothelia diamantiensis has come down in price. I found them to be very easy to raise up. They're very similar to the Chromatopelma cyanopubescens. They're smaller than the GBBs, and I've heard more folks tell me that theirs are more laid back generally and more shy than a GBB, which again would make them less intimidating. My only issue is every time I post something up about these guys, I speak to several folks who have tried to raise them and had high mortalities early on. So I don't want to put it in there yet because it sounds like this is still a spider that people wrestle with keeping. And again, with keeping your first sling, we want animals that are going to be super hardy, forgiving of any husbandry mistakes, or offer at least a gradient of how you can keep them and not give somebody a spider that a lot of folks report that they die mysteriously. That's a good way to kill somebody's confidence and make them not want to keep slings anymore. So I'm not officially adding them to this list, but you can't mention this. They have so many similarities with the C. cyanopubescens. I just feel like the C. cyanopubescens are hardier overall, and we don't have those mysterious deaths. So if you want to start with the Dolichothelia diamantiensis, definitely do your homework. I just put up a video, we'll talk about this at the end, but I just put up another video featuring them. I love them, but I definitely, that's something to keep in the back of your mind. So GBBs, awesome for beginner species as far as, and this is one of the ones that usually makes beginner species lists. So it lines up perfectly. You want a beginner species, you want a beginner sling, you got them both in this species. And finally, we've come to the last one on the list, which is the one I'm giving it the award for being possibly the best spider to start with for somebody who wants to grow up a spider from a sling to an adult. This is one that now makes it onto a lot of beginner species lists, although I did not put it on my first list and actually argued against it on the first list that I did. But then I kept one, and then I kept another one, and I have a third one, and I've talked to so many people that have started with this species, and so many people that started with this species as a sling, as their first tarantula, and raised it up to adult with zero issues. I think the thing that kept it off the list for a long time for me was a lot of what I had read about them was the fact that they can be particularly ornery as adults, kind of like the aforementioned Formictopus cancerides that they had. They could be a little aggressive, was used quite a bit. But I think looking back on it and talking to other keepers that love these guys, they have a great feeding response. And I'm guessing a lot of people mistake that because when you're used to keeping a Gramostola species, a Fonopelma, you know the deal. A lot of those, the feeding, they can have great feeding responses, but they're not ravenous to the point where anything touches or you go to, you know, change your water dish or pull out a bolus, they attack. A lot of people see that attack as they are attacking my hand, they're trying to kill me. No, you move something in their enclosure, they detected movement, they think it's prey. So I think the feeding response, it kind of, in a way, victimized this species to make people think it was worse than it is. I can tell you I've had zero issues with mine. I raised up one that was a mature male. I have a female that I just picked up. I'm raising up another sling. I love them, and I've had some people say that they are the perfect pet tarantula. And you know what? I'm not arguing it. When I first heard that, I was like, I don't know about that. But the more time I've spent with my new ones, the more I adore them. I am talking about the Acanthoscuria geniculata or Brazilian white knee. They're amazing. They're awesome. And I get now, I mean, there was a while, I think part of it was when I first got into the hobby, I saw the Janiculata and I saw the Vitalius Chromatis, it used to be Nandu Chromatis, and I loved the look of the Nandu. It was just a personal preference where I loved the look of it, so I picked up the Nandu, but after keeping both, I get it now. I get why people are so enamored with these. I get why some folks say they are the perfect spider. When I did my last beginner species list where I allowed keepers to vote on what they thought the best species was to start with, I was shocked with just how many people chimed in. Brazilian Whitney. They love them. How many people chimed in that raised them up from slings? So I think they have a ton to offer and for many can be a perfect stepping stone for ones that are looking at Pamphlebedius and going, I don't want one that's going to be that big, or Phomictibus, I don't want one that's going to be that big, or maybe they're worried about the skittishness or the orneriness of them. These are a great one to start off with. Now, what are the pros? The slings start off decent size. They eat great. They grow fairly quickly. I've had some folks say that they've gotten theirs up. Not quite in my experience. They don't grow quite as quickly as the Phomictopus and the Pamphlebedia species, but they do, I think they strike a perfect balance of growing fast enough that you're going to be encouraged by the spider, you know, molting frequently and putting on decent size, but slowly enough to truly allow the keeper to grow with the spider. The one that I picked up, it was about just over 2 years ago, I think, as a little tiny sling. I was actually shocked because it was a little teeny tiny sling. That one right now is pushing about 3.5 inches or so. It's had its adult colors for quite some time. That's another thing, is they're gorgeous spiders. And they pick up those colors fairly, searching the striping come in right around the 1.25 mark. This one, that's a good growth rate where somebody that picks it up, now you're actually growing with the spider. Sling, 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 starting to show some color. Yes. I mean, that's the thing we all wait for, that moment where they have that molt where they look like the adults. And then they start, they're still kind of small. Great feeding response. Easy to keep. Again, like most of the ones on this list, I said I'm going to keep repeating this. You give them some moisture as they're slings. Juveniles, I keep part of it moist. As adults, I moisten a corner, water dish. They are hardy as all get out. I've never heard any issues with people keeping them, with growing them up, which again is awesome. We want something that's readily available. These guys are super readily available, at least in the United States. I think I just saw somebody offering babies for $15. You can't get any better than that. So they're cheap. They're hardy. They grow at a perfect pace for somebody who's just starting to grow with slings. We have some here that grow a little fast. It might intimidate people. You know, baby sling, all of a sudden within a year, I have a big one, a little scary. Ooh. And then we have this one that I think it's a nice pace. Now, can they grow more quickly? Yes. I've had other people tell me that they've grown those up more quickly, but I think these are more likely to grow at that nice, perfect pace where you're going to get a few years out before you got an adult. Do they get big? Yes. I had somebody show me pictures of theirs because I said that I think a lot of folks were talking about them getting 9 inches. I don't think that's very likely at all. A lot of folks say 8 inches. I had somebody show me a molt of theirs. It was 8 inches, so it's probably about 8.25 inches. So it gets to be a big spider, but again, it's going to take time to get there. And then as far as attitudes, I have not had any issues with mine kicking hairs. Good feeding response. I think that's what gave them their reputation before as far as being, I think it was a combination. They've been readily available in the hobby for quite some time. So I think what would happen is people would go to a pet store. And again, this is conjecture, but I have heard from other people that have kind of backed this up. You'd go to the pet store years ago. You'd see a Pet Rock Gramostola rosea. I love them. I'm just being funny. But you'd see that one sitting there, and then you'd see this striped monster with the kind of reddish abdomen and the white and black striping. And they would pick one up, they'd get it home, and this thing had personality. And I think that's what was probably led to it. A lot of the stuff that's out there about the spiders being super ornery and whatnot, I do believe is partly due to the fact that a lot of them came in as wild-caught OBTs. Another one, there were a lot of wild-caught OBTs out there. They're extra ornery. I do believe that as we, you know, this goes back to the podcast I did a while back, as we raise these more and more in the hobby and we have more and more offspring of captive bred individuals, they do seem to lose some of those personality quirks, we'll call them. So I do think that it probably back in the day, people would pick these up and be like, man, they're big, they hit like trucks, they're a little ornery. I've had no problem with mine. So Acanthoscuria Janiculata, awesome spiders overall. They did make the beginner species list, but again, with the caveat, they get big, they can have a good feeding response, they can be a little bit skittish, that's something to keep in mind, but just amazing spiders and a great one for somebody to start off with who's like, hey, you know what, I've kept a couple spiders now, a couple larger ones, I'm looking to get a sling. Definitely don't overlook Acanthoscuria Janiculata. So that about covers my main list. I tried to focus in on some good ones that are, you know, again, in the hobby established and that I have a lot of experience with, so I can back it up. Now, a couple honorable mentions. This one here, I was going to put on it because I do think a lot of people start with them as slings and do just fine with it, but I took it off the list because I tried to put ones on that the slings weren't teeny tiny, as we mentioned earlier. And these slings, I raised a sack of these years ago. They're small. They're very small, but they're not overly teeny tiny, but I've had a lot of people call me like or email or message me saying, I picked this one up and my God, they're small. It's the smallest thing I've ever kept. I'm talking about Haplolepis species Columbia large or the Haplolepis formosus, the pumpkin patches. I've talked to many folks over the years that started with these as their first slings. The only con I could say for these is they are super tiny as slings, but pros, they grow out of that sling stage so fast. They are one of the only spiders out there that have their adult colors as slings. They look just like they do as adults as tiny slings, which is amazing. They eat great, molt with regularity, put on decent size with each molt. I've heard folks that if they're keeping them on the warmer side that have had males mature out in under a year. I know somebody that had that, it was like 9 months, which is ridiculous. Females or adults within 2 years. So growing with them, maybe not so much, but considering they only get to be about 3 inches or so, you're not going to have a very large spider on your hand. So I think Haplolepis formosus, for those who want a little extra challenge dealing with those smaller slings, you really want to brag. I raised this from a teeny tiny sling. These are great ones to start off with. And then the other one I'm putting on here because I'm raising up 4 of them right now. I bought a female years ago from Tom Patterson back before he was hardcore. And picked up a young adult female. It was one of the few specimens I bought in that time period that was raised up. It was a great price and it looked gorgeous. And I had always said, I'm going to get slings and raise them up. Well, I've raised up slings and they're awesome. I'm talking about Nandu trapepii, the Brazilian blonde, I think it is. I'm raising up 4 slings I got from Fear Em Not. They do start off very, very small. Again, I was actually shocked at how small they are. But they grow, they eat great, they grow quickly, they're hardy as all get out. Some of the hardiest spiders I ever raised. I have mine now. They're young adult size, so probably about 3.5-4 inches or so. And I basically give them enough substrate to burrow in, although they kind of abandon their burrows once they put on some size. I keep part of it moist. As slings, I kept it moist. As juveniles, part of it moist. Adults, I give a moist corner in a water dish. They eat great. They grow fairly quickly overall. They're not going to blow off the chart. I mean, they're faster growing spiders, but they're not as fast as I would say Formictopus in that first year or Pamphibidius in that first year. And I think they'd be a good one to grow with. Now, the big con with these guys is supposedly the hairs are really bad, but I've yet to have one kick. So that's one of the reasons I put them on the list. And they're gorgeous spiders. They're big, fluffy, cute spiders. So Nandu trapepii, another one to consider if you're looking for one. They're very readily available. Again, the females have huge sacks when they have babies. And as a result, they're usually very easy to come by and quite inexpensive. So we'll add the pumpkin patch and the Brazilian blonde to it. Now, slings to avoid when someone is just looking at their first slings. I'm going to add only 2 to this list that I really wish people would stay away from until they get some experience. And it's because after years of doing this, these are the 2 that I get that people contact me. They think it'll be a good one to start off with, and then they have issues for 2 entirely different reasons. The first one is Trinochilus murinus, the OBT. If you notice, there aren't any old worlds on here. Are there old world slings that are great to start with? Absolutely. But again, I try to think in terms of most people. They're just starting to keep slings for the first time, haven't made that transition to old worlds, so we kept them off the list. Trinochilus are about as bulletproof as you can get, some of the hardiest spiders you can find on the market. But again, I don't think they're as bad as their reputation. I've spent years trying to explain to people they're villainized unjustly, I think. But I can't tell you how many people get them as little teeny tiny slings and that first rehousing comes along and they are in panic mode. There's a stigma around them that they are going to be, regardless of what you hear and what you try to convince yourself, there are people that pick up their first and they're still scared of them. That can be an issue. So I would not recommend this to folks. So I do think they're amazing spiders. I think for starting old worlds, they're great, but I would not encourage folks to start with them. I think what they hear is that they're super easy to raise up and think this will be great. But then that time comes for that first rehousing and it's panic mode. So let's keep those off the list. The other one that's probably going to surprise some people, And unfortunately, it's one that does show up on a lot of beginners lists. I would almost be willing at this point to call this an advanced species only because of the amount of issues people have with growing them up. When we did the list of slings that give people most trouble, I believe this was handily number one. We're talking about Caribbean versicolor. Yes, they're gorgeous. Yes, they tend to be more laid-back spiders. Yes, they grow decent, you know, fairly quickly. And they're a little on the slower side, but so many, just this week, two people emailed me, and I would say if I got paid for every time somebody contacted me about what went wrong about the Caribbean versicolor, I could probably retire right now. It's that bad. Two people emailed me just this week saying they picked up their versicolors, they were doing great, they were following all the directions that they've read out there, and both of them died mysteriously. Now, I will say in both cases, when I saw pictures, they were overly moist. That's the thing that kills them, the stuffy, moist enclosures. But this is when people still struggle with. There's still stuff out there saying they need to be kept moist, even though the majority of us that have had luck with them keep them dry with the water dish, maybe drip a little water on their webbing once in a while, but we keep things mostly dry with good airflow. People see them. They love them. I get contacted. I've done all my homework. I get it. I know how to keep them. And then they freak out, start putting too much moisture in there, and end up with dead spiders. Or they just end up with dead spiders and things seem like they were going well and they were keeping them well. So Caribbean versicolor, not a good one to start with as far as I'm concerned, as far as a first sling. That's one I have had many people over the years keep these, lose them, and say they've lost all confidence and don't want to keep slings anymore. That's sad. We don't want to promote spiders. They're awesome spiders, and I think once people get enough experience that they can learn to trust what they read about husbandry, I think the big problem is people don't trust. I've had somebody say flat out to me, this was a couple months ago, I read everything. They were asking about Caribbean versicolor. I read everything you said about it. Unfortunately, I read that you shouldn't keep them dry, so I do have the substrate moist. Well, then don't contact me because I told you the key to keeping these guys. And it happens all the time. So I think until people are able to have that confidence to go, or at least be able to go, you know what, it scares me because I'm reading this, but more I'm reading these keepers that have had success with them, keep them this way, I'm going to follow that. Until you can get to that point, just leave them alone. They don't make, I don't care what anybody says. I'm sure people will chime in. I kept them with no problem. I get it. That's great. But I can tell you, for every one person that keeps this with no problem, I think there's probably one person that lost theirs. So Caribbean versicolors, let's not keep those as our first sling. Let's get some experience with slings. Let's get some experience with keeping them with air, you know, airflow, with keeping the moisture levels correct, whatnot. And then once we have some experience, move into them. So that covers it for my list. Are there other ones out there that probably make good ones? Yes, I would love to hear. I'm sure somebody is going to respond with a species and I'm going to go, man, why didn't I put that one on there? So I would love to hear, what do you think what would you recommend somebody? Somebody comes up to you and says, I want to keep a sling for the first time. What would your recommendation be? I'd love to hear that and your reasoning. Again, I'm sure somebody will come in with old worlds. I'm staying away from old worlds on this because I'm looking for just anybody that can just jump right in with them. What do you got? I'd love to hear it. I'd love to be able to on next episode. A lot of times I put on these calls and I think people are like, oh, he's not going to say it. Know that I do read the comments, and if I get enough of them that I think I can have an extended dialogue on the topic, I love putting them out there and continuing the dialogue. I think that's a lot better than just hearing one guy talk about what he thinks his experiences are. So that will do it for this one. As always, you can find me on thomasbigspiders.com. You can find me on Thomas Big Spiders, the podcast, YouTube. I just put up a rehousing video and a husbandry video on Dolichothele diamantinensis, or the Brazilian blue beauty dwarf, something like that. I love these spiders. Again, more people coming on. I find it amusing and at the same time, just a little bit annoying how people have to jump on and go, I love GBBs. If I could only keep one, I may only, like if you said you can only keep a GBB or a Dolichothele diamantinensis, I may have to go with the GBB only because I consider it a hobby staple and it was one of the first ones I raised up. So I'd be really upset about it, but that might be the one I kept. I'm just lucky that I keep both and I love both, but I can't tell you how funny I find it, sometimes annoying, when I put up a video and somebody's like, it's just a poor man's GBB. Go away. They're not. If you keep them, you can see there are enough differences that warrant the fact that obviously there are two different camps when it comes to this spider. So, or these spiders. When I did my verses, it was like 50-50. I love GBBs. I love this one. Or there was the people like me that are like, you know what? Maybe I give a little bit of an edge to the GBB, but luckily I don't have to worry about that. I keep them both because I love them both. So that video is up. Feel free to check that one out. Guys, that will do it for me for today. As always, stay safe and we'll catch you all next time.